City of Ocala Investment Committee meeting, February 3rd, 2014.
Today is Monday, February 3rd. This is the quarterly investment committee meeting. We will start off with a roll call. James Hilty is not able to make it today, he's out of the country. Matt Brower.
Here.
Diane Riker.
Here.
Cindy Kelly.
Here.
Marion Davis.
Here.
Marie Brooks. Here. Trying to convince myself. Also present, we have Stephen Alexander of PFM, Mark Callis of Stable River, and David Furfine of Sawgrass. We have John Griffith of Cat Trust. Next item, if everyone's had the opportunity to review the minutes, I need a motion to approve those.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes for the November 4th meeting as approved. Just a couple of items for discussion here before we get into the reports. We are in the process of requesting City Council's approval for the renewal of the contract, so I'm going to pass this around for you guys to sign. I know I sent it out for you guys to sign, but I already have the attorney's signature on the documents. I'm going to have you sign those. Just know that it's pending the approval of City Council. And after the last meeting, we had a discussion basically regarding meeting presentations for all the managers. We would like to request that the managers presenting basically condense their presentations slightly. We discussed basically limiting redundancy, and I'll have John step in and explain that a little better.
Yeah.
For me.
We just chatted with the committee about this issue, and were the committee was very interested in continuing to hear from each of the managers in a significant way at every meeting, but at the same time interested in keeping the meeting crisp and moving along. And so I suggested that perhaps you could one of the three of you could rotate the essentially doing a market commentary.
Sure.
So, in other words, whoever is the first presenter in any given meeting would provide a full market commentary of his firm's views. Of course, commentary interjections are fine, but when you get to your presentation, if you're the second presenter, he would strictly stick with your portfolio and the results therein. The hope would be that it would shorten the meetings. Keep it pithy, as Bill says, and also if anyone was interested in using technology to provide their presence, that would be acceptable as well.
And I know Stephen asked if we could do every other meeting.
By webinar or something,
you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay with that.
Yeah. But just if there's any comment or objection or anything.
Okay. With that said, we'll move into the Stable River December 31st, 2013 meeting.
I think you probably found that you know, many of us obviously have the same experience in the fixed income market, so that sounds fine. To put this into slide mode.
Oh. I believe it's Control L. If I'm not mistaken.
Yep, it is.
Perfect. Right.
Good job.
I remember.
Okay, so we'll start with the fourth quarter summary. We have good news and we have bad news last quarter. The good news is that the economy seemed to be picking up pace. At least third quarter GDP came in at 4.1%, a level as high as we've seen since 2009. So that was certainly encouraging. There was a big component of that was inventory building that obviously isn't as high quality of a growth figure, but let's keep in mind that businesses don't build inventory just to build inventory. They build inventory because they believe that sales are behind it. So something certainly positive there. From the market standpoint, once again, the Federal Reserve managed to give the fixed income investors and equity investors, I should say, somewhat of a surprise when they said they would start their dialing back their purchases by $10 billion on December 17th and 18th after their meeting. So the tapering has begun. As a consequence, predominantly longer-term interest rates started to rise pretty precipitously at the end of December. We'll talk a little bit in a moment about the fixed income yield curves. One other big note is that inflation remains low. So the two things that the Federal Reserve is charged with their monetary policy is bringing about price stability and a quote-unquote full level of employment. While they think that unemployment is too high and employment is not full, they feel they can provide accommodation via monetary policy and will continue with their low 0 to 25 basis point Fed funds rate. At the same time, they really don't have many fears of inflation right now. Inflation is trending about 1%. Their long-term target is about 2%, and threshold is about 2.5%, where they'd start to become concerned and maybe adjust monetary policy. So while the quantitative easing is being scaled back and of course was by another $10 billion last week to now $65 billion a month target, the Fed funds rate remains quite low. American household wealth is growing. That's certainly a good sign. Helping drive that is home prices and stock market valuations. So retirement accounts, 401ks, pension plans, things like that have done quite well. Certainly in the equity markets, 2013 was quite a banner year. 2014 is showing a little different so far. But nonetheless, one thing that we are seeing as well is the debt service level for households is declining. So Americans appear to be slowly getting their finances back in order, particularly since the 2008 period when indebtedness was so high, predominantly with mortgage borrowing and home equity finance. Payrolls in November were pretty strong. They were above 200,000 and had prior months were being revised up. That's certainly a good thing. What continues to be problematic in the employment report is that the labor participation rate is quite low. It's now at 63%. It's a multi-decade low. Some of that is from retiring baby boomers, but I think we all know that a lot of that is from a cohort of workers who are long-term employed and, you know, are now out of the workforce, so they're counted as not participating in that participation rate standpoint. Just a word on the markets. During the fourth quarter, the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index was down 14 basis points. This is the longer full spectrum bond index. And 2.02% down, that is, over 2013. That is the worst year for investment grade fixed income investors in almost two decades, since 1994. Consequently, a period when the Fed began a tightening campaign to raise interest rates from 2% to 5.25%. Among the sectors that were most affected, treasuries were down 75 basis points. Government-related, predominantly agency securities, were up just 4 basis points. Corporate bonds did quite well in the fourth quarter at 1.11%, and securitized assets, which are comprised mostly in the aggregate bond index of U.S. government agency bonds, were also down. So treasuries and government mortgage-backed securities did not fare very well in the fourth quarter. Lower quality bonds outperformed in the fourth quarter, so the triple B rated component were the strongest performers, and over the fourth quarter we saw that single A, double A, and then finally triple A bonds, triple A bonds actually put in a negative performance of negative 55 basis points. A lot of that has to do with the composition of what the AAA component is, and that AAA component tends to be treasuries and government agency securities and mortgage-backed bonds. Taking a look at the second chart to the right, one thing we can also see is that shorter securities, 1 to 3 years and 3 to 5 years, had a positive year. 3 to 5 years actually slightly negative on the quarter at, slightly negative on the year at 4 basis points, up 16 basis points in the quarter. Longer term bonds, the longer we go, the worse they did in the year and the worse they did in the quarter. So to think about this, what this means graphically from a yield curve perspective, we see that on a year-over-year basis, and even from last quarter 9/30/2013, last quarter end, pardon me, third quarter end, that the yield curve continues to steepen, most pronounced in the belly of the yield curve, belly being that sort of 3 to 10 year part of the yield curve, where the biggest percentage change, but the most affected bonds from a total return or mark-to-market standpoint took place at the longer end of the yield curve. Looking forward to 2014, cold weather aside, we think that the makeup of gross domestic product looks fairly positive. Consumption is increasing, investment is increasing, net exports, or our trade deficit, which is being helped mostly by the fact that we're importing less oil and starting to export more natural gas predominantly, is helping us, is helping the country with its trade deficit. Government expenditures on the federal level are flat pretty much, while local government expenditures are increasing as home value and tax receipts are coming in higher than we've been. The members on that side of the table are probably well aware that local government has to balance budgets while the federal government doesn't. Really, the federal government has been in a deficit spending standpoint. Local governments have been constrained, but that too is improving slowly. So while the outlook, particularly for the components of GDP, are positive, they're by no means gangbusters. We think we're looking at at the end of the day, probably a 3%, maybe 3.5% year of growth. But that's stronger than what we've had, and we'll take what we can get. Um, our outlook for employment. I would say that, you know, given some of the weather stuff, is probably going to be a little bit rockier here in recent periods, but there are a number of industries where employers are trying to hire and trying to find workers. So that's, you know, that's certainly good. We also think that the housing market, while we don't expect a year, I think the national average last year was about 13% for home price appreciation, according to the Case-and-Shiller 20 City Index. We don't expect it to be quite that robust, but there's still some very good underpinnings to the real estate market. Continued strong sales, in some cases, people feeling that there's a lack of availability of homes. So those are things that will probably continue to support the housing market. And, you know, quantitative easing is obviously underway. At the end of the day, we think that that probably leads to a little bit more volatility in the interest rate outlook for 2014. And we say volatility, remember that volatility has two sides. I may be wrong, but I imagine that none of us would thought that we'd be sitting here today after two announcements from quantitative easing with a rallying treasury market. But that's what volatility holds, so. Our outlook, at least for Stable River and for the intermediate portfolio that we manage, is to keep a short to neutral position in our shorter term portfolios and a more bulleted position in our intermediate and longer term portfolios. What that means is that, as we saw in the fourth quarter of 2014, securities at the longer end of the spectrum, this spectrum being 1 to 10 for this portfolio, 0 to 10 really. At the longer end of that spectrum, we tend to be a little bit underweight from the index because we think that's the most volatile component. From a duration standpoint, we'll continue to keep the portfolio a bit shorter than the benchmark, so that it is less sensitive to rising interest rates. Clearly, the longer interest rates represent potentially a bigger risk for fixed income investors. We plan to maintain an overweight in corporate securities and securitized assets versus U.S. Treasury bonds and U.S. government agency bonds because of the low coupons on the latter securities and the less coupon cushion they have from rising interest rates. From our outlook for specific risks in credit securities, corporate bonds, we continue to watch for what we call idiosyncratic risk. And that's really just the risk of a particular issuer conducting activities that tend to be more beneficial for stockholders, equity holders, than bondholders. Increasing leverage, taking on riskier acquisitions. Certainly, corporate America is very flush with cash, and sometimes that cash can drive behavior that's not advantageous to the bondholders. I mentioned that treasuries remain less attractive to us in the securitized assets, so the mortgage bonds and the multifamily bonds, or the asset-backed bonds that we hold. We're looking for securities where there are limitations to what we call extension risk, or the ability of the borrowers to delay principal payments, so that these shorter-term securities, we tend to have our securitized assets a little bit shorter than the index, and we don't want to have borrowers with the capacity to be able to extend their payment terms and continue to pay low coupon rates or low interest rates on their loans for longer periods of time, because that would impact the value of those securities. We took a look at the yield curve. You know, interesting to note, in 2013, in May, the 10-year Treasury was at a low of 164 and ended the year at 3.03. That's a pretty big move in interest rates from a very low level. So not surprising with that kind of change in interest rates that we see 2013, you know, as a year that was, you know, about as bad as any in two decades, given that that shift in the yield curve. Just a couple of notes in the portfolio. The market value, $51,351,000. The effective duration, so that's the third item from the bottom on the left-hand side, 3.56 years versus the 4.42 for the index. The yield to maturity is 1.83 versus 2.01. If you take a look at our distribution by duration, distribution of duration, I said that we would be more bulleted, so we'll have more securities clustered around the duration average and less at the long end of the curve. So we're keeping our exposure there down a little bit. From a sector standpoint, you can see that we hold a much higher weight in financials and industrial bonds, so those are the corporate securities. Particularly financial bonds, we like the fact that bank bonds, those are industries that are very highly regulated at this point. They're required to keep very high capital levels. All of the tricks that corporate America is utilizing to the benefit of the shareholders, unfortunately, banks are not able to do right now. So it tends to be a good place to seek some extra protection. From the securitized sector at 37%, we're also overweight the index. From the return standpoint, last quarter, the portfolio generated a return of negative 0.27%. The blended benchmark was negative 25 basis points. So we managed in the fourth quarter with our shorter duration position and our overweight to corporate and securitized bonds to generate a positive return relative to the benchmark's negative one. However, on a year-to-date basis, we generated a negative return of negative 25 basis points versus negative 121 basis points for the index. Again, the shorter duration in the allocation, sector allocation, has helped us relative to the benchmark index to generate a stronger return in more positive periods and a less negative return in some of the most negative periods. So with that, I think just a word on the compliance within the portfolio, meeting the compliance requirements. I do note that we've had a shift in the third quarter to the 1 to 10 domestic master, which does include triple B securities. I think that was effective 1031. So we are meeting the requirements for Stable Rivers investment policy within the larger mandate of the city. And I think with that, I will I'll turn it over unless there are any questions.
I actually have a question.
Yes.
On your compliance list here, you have triple B minus.
Yes.
The policy, I believe, says triple B, not we don't do triple B minus.
Actually, I think the policy, which I'm glad you brought that up because that is one of my notes. So the policy says whose debt is rated triple B,
at least triple B.
Categorical.
Mm-hmm.
By Standard and Poor's. Now, actually, if I go to our specific, I think the categorical is in our addendum.
No.
Yeah, she'll be a categorical. If we can see this a little bit better, this says here, categorical rating of triple B by Standard and Poor's or BAA. So that appears to be a split to me, because a categorical triple B rating would include the category, which is triple B plus, triple B
minus,
flat, and triple B minus. But then we notice the Moody's at BAA. So it appears to allow for a categorical rating on the Standard and Poor's side, but a limitation of BAA2 by Moody's.
But I believe we clarified that. I believe Dave was the one that asked the question in one of our meetings if we intend on staying away from triple B minus.
It's in the minutes. It's in the minutes.
Yeah. And we said
we
were staying away from triple B minus.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly that, but it's if someone has the minutes before, maybe we can.
I can check for it.
But I do remember the conversation, and I think we did say it.
Well, Mark, what you're saying is there appears to be some conflict between the two different mandates that you're operating under.
Yes.
So we need to clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
I would, that would be appreciated.
Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that afterwards and make sure that you have clear instructions, so it's not ambiguous.
The other thing is that it does say or. Now, it says or for Standard and Poor's. There are two different policy standards as we see them. Some investment policies are written with a minimum of a categorical minimum or a specific minimum, and then say or. So it's, you could have a triple B rating by one, and the other could be a notch lower or a split rating. And that's the case if it says or. If it says and, then both ratings must be of the same quality. So one would allow you, for instance, to have a BAA 2 rating by Moody's and a triple B minus rating if it's an or. So that's probably something else.
Thank you.
The or is fairly consistent through the
policy.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And I don't know if that was the intention, is to make sure that at least one
agent, of them, yeah, at right. least one of the rating agencies were at that.
Okay. Which is important to us as securitized investors, because a lot of securitized issuers get ratings from Moody's but not Standard and Poor's.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
believed by the market that Moody's is a more effective rater, if you will, of securitized assets. So sometimes they'll just pay for one rating and not the standard and Poor's rating. So the portfolio itself, if we go to the corporate section.
It doesn't have any triple B minus there.
It does not have any triple B minus securities.
So we need to clarify that before.
Yes.
We'll just get it right through that one.
But that would be helpful, and I apologize if I...
No, that's okay. I saw it.
I've been aware...
I clarified that.
Okay.
You didn't in your addendum, we didn't.
Okay.
I have a question. Can you opine on the LIBOR, 10-year LIBOR? What is the effect of the tapering likely to have on the LIBOR? The reason I ask this is we're members of FMPA who's got 9 contracts of $50 million each with an expiration date of October 1st, 2015, round the money by about $50 million. What would you expect to happen with the LIBOR as tapering continues?
Well, we expect the LIBOR would continue to rise as tapering continues.
How earnestly?
So there's less U.S. Treasury security issuance. At the same time, one of the biggest buyers out there is reducing its purchases. That should take pressure off the market and allow rates to rise. And the Federal Reserve is content to do that, to allow interest rates to rise at the longer end of the yield curve. So far, that hasn't happened. But I would imagine if our outlook for slowly improving growth, a little bit stronger than we've seen in the past few years, with the Federal Reserve stepping away from purchases, that's going to cause the yield curve, the Treasury curve, to steepen. And that's one of the principal components, if you will, into the 10-year, the 10-year LIBOR curve is effectively a swap rate, fixed to float. When the fixed benchmark component, they're highly correlated. They're not 100% correlated. They are highly correlated. Something else that tends to drive the LIBOR swap rate a little higher is volatility, and we've certainly seen that increase. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would expect that the LIBOR curve throughout 2013 would get a little bit steeper and that rate would rise. And if I was a betting man for January, I'd be
in trouble.
Okay, I appreciate that information.
Any other questions, Mark?
I wanted to ask, just to segue from that, because of the direction of interest rates over the course of the last 30 or 50 days, whatever, is the, and how did that, how did that impact the portfolio as you now have the structure?
Well, the portfolio from an interest rate standpoint, I haven't seen we'll get our finalized performance in a couple of days here, probably Wednesday or Thursday. I think it's going to be positive performance. High-quality corporate bonds have done pretty well. Lower-quality ones have not over January. And certainly, it would have helped us in hindsight to have had a longer duration bias rather than a shorter one. There's certainly months when you can look back and say, boy, I wish I was positioned another way last month. The way many of us feel with our retirement plans, 401ks for the month of January, but
yeah.
Looking out, at the developments in the economy, the absolute level of interest rates, the likely effects of the reduction in quantitative easing, we think we're positioned properly. And while we might make some tactical moves to extend or shorten duration or move along the yield curve throughout the year, our overall outlook is for steadily rising interest rates. We think we'll end the year with a higher level of interest rates than we did with 2013. So,
do you or your firm have any broad theory as to what happened over the course of the month with respect to the
why we've seen a rally in?
Yeah.
Well, there's each. The market is, yes, we do. And that theory is that the market does not take a lot of comfort in a policy whose slow end is nothing that the market's seen before. We've never, this whole idea of quantitative easing is new. It was launched in a classroom in Princeton, New Jersey. And while we think it has been beneficial to the economy, the monetary stimulus has ended up in some very unusual places. I mean, look at what's happened with emerging market currency and securities. When they talked about it in September, and now they've started to step away from it now. So the market is, while it derives a lot of confidence in sort of a feeling that, you know, risky assets will continue to add value to portfolios, the market doesn't know exactly how to look at that when quantitative easing is being removed. So, again, I think this makes for, you know, a lot more, will make for volatility in the coming months. And that's why we think we've seen the, you know, Treasuries is the sort of flight to quality vehicle. That's why we think we've seen this.
But ultimately, you still believe, holding to the concept that between now and the end of the year, rates are going to be higher.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions for Mark?
If not, I need a motion to approve the December 31st State of River Report.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And we'll move into Stephen
and right.
TFM's report.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And the market update is, and moving on. All right, so let's get right into the you have the market update, as well as you should be receiving every month we send out market updates. So
yes.
I think we have you pretty well covered. Here is sort of the, right here in the center here are the bullet points really regarding the portfolio. Again, ours is the 1-3. So generally speaking, we are maintaining a defensive posture. You'll notice our durations are less than the benchmark. That's going to be consistent really since not only this past quarter, but the quarter prior to that. And we had that heart attack back in April, May of last year when the Fed started to talk about easing up on the tapering program. So we've had that in position. We're going to be moving more to a laddered portfolio, and I'll show you the maturity distribution here shortly to kind of give you a sense of what our thoughts are from the maturity standpoint. But generally, our feeling is that rates are going to be up, and rates are already up, except for the very short end held hostage to the Federal Reserve. So that's really kind of our thoughts there from that standpoint. From a performance standpoint, we did pretty well against the benchmark. We've had a pretty good 6 months. We're a little behind the last 12 months, and if you remember, last quarter, ending September 30th, was a pretty large negative quarter, if you remember that quarter, because of what happened with Ben Bernanke. Again, we don't have to listen to him anymore because he's out of office. So we're kind of done with him. Janet's now at the helm here. She hasn't quite been sworn in yet, but that should be happening here shortly. So we've had a pretty good returns considering what the shock we went through. And as you can see in the second row there, where our effective duration is, a little bit higher December 31st, when we took advantage of higher interest rates, and we've got just a little bit, but you'll see where we were September 30th. I think strategically going forward, this will be pretty much kind of our strategy. I think duration management is going to be kind of important for us. We certainly feel the biases toward rising interest rates, which I don't think we've said that in the last 5 years, it seems like. I don't think anybody said the word rising and interest rates all in the same sentence. So that's going to be something new that we're going to be faced with. We're all going to be experiencing volatility in all three portfolios. I think all three portfolios will experience negative quarters, you know, going forward. The good news is we'll be investing in higher interest rates, which means more interest income back to the city. So that's really, except it's going to be a little ugly going, getting to that new interest rate curve as the economy does get better. So you'll see that as our strategy throughout the year. From a contribution standpoint, this is the benchmark, and this is your portfolio laid out, and you'll see the weightings and the contribution associated with each of the sectors. And you'll notice here, for instance, mortgage-backed securities, at least for our portfolio, was a negative return, was actually double A's with a better return than the single A's. So that was kind of interesting as the credit quality became important in that perspective. But that was really kind of the theme of last quarter, where corporates did fairly well. From an asset allocation standpoint, you'll notice that we're reducing our exposure to treasuries, increased it into corporate notes, as we're about 18.3% versus 16.9% last quarter. We're utilizing some commercial paper, and that's really a holding tank. That's going to be our ammunition. So if rates rise, we have some ammunition to buy into higher interest rates, and I'll show you that here shortly. Credit quality, is very strong. We don't have any triple B's added to the portfolio, but everything else is either single A, minus, or better in the portfolio. You'll notice that we have a little bit more holdings and municipal obligations, and I'll show you that. And that's simply because the story was in 2013 that munis had a better rate of return than in previous year. And we talked about in previous quarters where munis have stood versus treasuries and where they have stood currently. As that story sort of plays out a little bit, I think that trade is a little bit done maybe in 2014 off the sea, but we did take advantage of that as well. Here's the maturity distribution as well as various aspects of the investment policy requirements. You'll notice that our weighting in the under 6 was increased. We almost doubled it, and taken away from the 2 to 3, sort of bringing that ammunition back a little bit. That's what helped bring the duration down. And that's something we've done over the last couple quarters, really kind of positioning the portfolio for rising interest rates. We want to be prepared for that. And that's sort of the position that we're taking. You can see that in the actual maturity distribution. And all the characteristics and requirements on the upper right-hand corner are all within the investment policy rules. This lays out the benchmark, which is the Merrill 1 to 3 Treasury Agency Index in red, and your portfolio laid out in blue, and you can see the strategic moves that we're making here for the upcoming year. And of course, those little holdings out to the far right, of course, of the mortgage-backed securities. You probably should notice that we did change the compliance page. This page and report is sent to you every single month. Hopefully, you're getting that. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Affirmative would be good. Okay, good. Okay. Yes. Just want to make sure you're getting that. Mm-hmm. So we changed it. So it's a two-page report now. The first page will be the permitted investments from a security type up against the investment policy. we added a far right-hand column called in compliance. If it's out of compliance, it'll be highlighted in red automatically, so you'll see that. And then the next page, of course, is every single holding in the portfolio. And you'll notice that a variety of financials are in the portfolio, as we've talked about before, as we've charted migrate away from some of the financials. So we've got a pretty good helping of the corporate notes. Many of these were featured in the commercials during the Super Bowl, so you'll recognize many of the names here. So maybe
we can run on those commercials later.
They spent a lot of money, so maybe we'll have to think of different corporate holdings.
Yeah.
They blew a lot of their revenues for the year. And the corporate notes, in the municipal notes, you'll see that the California State is and the Michigan are the two holdings there. So everything was in compliance with the investment policy.
And California will pay us back or they're going to go bankrupt.
Yeah. I think they're a little bit on an improvement. But that's certainly something to be concerned about. Yeah. So if anybody has any questions about our report, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Okay.
Motion to accept.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Approved. We'll go into the Sawgrass December 31st report. That's David for fun.
Gotcha. Look at that. Good morning. Thank
morning.
You. We'll skip over all of the other stuff that you've asked me to breeze by. I think what you're going to hear is a lot of agreement from Sawgrass with the prior two managers, and the words are going to be totally opposite, so it's going to be interesting. I'll try to point out what I mean by that going forward. The most recent quarter, the Sawgrass portfolio for you is the middle of the three plans with a 1 to 5 year benchmark, and our return was a positive 15 basis points for the most recent quarter. Your benchmark was 8 basis points. We'll get into a little bit more of where did that come from as we go forward. Talk about the tapering beginning. We're not creating enough jobs to cure everything, but it seems to be getting better. So what do we do going forward? In terms of dissecting the portfolio, interest rates can move. You can be in different sectors, and you can own very specific securities. We talked a little bit before about the yield curve, and Mark said he was going to be a bullet. Steve said he was going to be shorter. And I'm going to say we're going to be a barbell. Now, what does that mean? Correct me if I'm wrong. You wanted to underweight the long end and get into the 4 and 5 year bucket.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to avoid the 2 and 3 and get into the 1 and less. And from a 1 to 5 year standpoint, I want to agree with Steve and be in the 1 and less. And agree with Mark and be in the 3 to 5, 4 and 5 years. So that means I've got to underweight the 1, 2, and 3. So I've got 1s and 5s and not a lot in the middle. So I'm using totally opposite bond words, yield curve strategies to get to the same holdings. So duration usually is the only thing that most bond guys talk about, whether we're long or short, up or down. And now going forward, it's probably not as important. It's where you own your securities. That's why I went through that. And you can see the bars in the bottom are showing you the relative movements of the different sectors. So you could be long or short your benchmark on average, and you can get there lots of different ways. And it's going to be where you own your bonds that's going to be more important. In terms of corporate bonds, this is 2 years and the extra yield that corporate bonds as a whole have offered, and you'll see that it is better. So it would have, the downward sloping line means your prices are going up, your yield spreads are going down. So it's good to have owned corporate bonds. I'm going to characterize them as kind of fairly valued going forward right now. the best corporate bonds are the ones that are trying to relever, and they might not be the best going forward, and that the worst bonds historically are the ones that are heavily regulated for a reason, and those might have been where you want to be. And what I mean by that is, in terms of interest rates, you've just recently added triple Bs, that's the red line. And you'll see that over the last 2 years, that spread has compressed, the triple B versus everything else that's better. So you're getting about a 70 basis point advantage if you owned all of the triple Bs, which we don't. But it was over 100 basis points 2 years ago, and 3 years ago it was even bigger. So I'm going to call that as it's not a free lunch to go into triple Bs, but you have to do your homework and own some very specific right ones. And over time, we'll get there. And I think Mark touched on this a little bit before, how financials have done better than industrials over the most recent 2, 3 years, 4 years. They're the ones that caused the financial crisis. If we were to draw that red line back 2 years additional, I'd have to go off the screen here. So the traditional measures that the financials are offering less spread, as their raw material for production is their creditworthiness, as opposed to the industrials where you have these big, huge factories that can operate as collateral. They don't care to be as creditworthy. So the normal cycle is getting back to where we want to be. Here's a longer-term look at your performance. I mentioned the outperformance and a slight positive number for the most recent quarter. Last year, we were only able to generate 37 basis points for a full year. I'll give you a mark-to-market for this calendar year. We just ended January, and I called before I walked in, and your portfolio, the Sawgrass portfolio, delivered 47 basis points of total return for January. So that's more than the last 12 months combined. The benchmark was 49, so 2 basis points of a lag. It's kind of a measurement noise. So we're happy to say that you've captured something, and we'll try to lock that in as time goes forward. An interesting thing I'd like to point out is we've got the details of the Merrill Lynch Gov Credit 1 to 5 A or better, and then the full index. And if you go all the way over to the last column, since December of 92, so we're talking about 22 years worth of, you're only going to get 11 basis points annually difference. So it's not a market difference, your old benchmark to your new benchmark. But it is directionally positive, and it's not positive each year. You have some negative periods in there. So it's not a cure-all, it's just another tool in the toolbox. Our portfolio as it stands at the end of the quarter, our duration, or our measure of the average of all of our positions that we've taken, is shorter, 2.1 versus 2.7. And the yield is comparable, slightly less at 97 basis points to 103 for the benchmark. And we've accomplished that by underweighting the low-yielding treasuries and overweighting the corporate notes to the extent that we've at the maximum corporate weighting of 50, actually 49.8 or 9, the extra goes into agencies as they are offering slightly better yields than treasuries with the same type of credit risk. Maturity distribution is not as meaningful. You'll see that we're long the long end and long the front end. But in the duration calculations, this is where I said we've got a full weight of the longest period and a overweight significant in the front end with a devoid in the middle. If you think about a one-year treasury earning 10 basis points, what good is that going to do for your city? So we're not going to try to own that. Most of the 42 that's in that front end is actually 3, 4, 5 year maturity securities that have a floating rate or an adjustable nature to it. So every quarter they'll adjust on top of LIBOR. So that might hedge a little bit about what you're worried about somewhere else on your balance sheet. We're not anticipating large increases soon. So you might get away with no increases for 4 or 5 months and then slowly moving up, kind of my opinion. The distribution, you'll see that in that last triple B bucket, we did add one security, a note issued by Celgene Corp, a biotech pharmaceutical manufacturer who is trying to develop cancer drugs.
So we've got a lot of revenue associated with the research. And we hope they get even more successful for you. In terms of the compliance monitor, again, we've been working with Cap Trust going back and forth on improving the or updating the presentations. I noticed that we've got the triple B minus pegged here. It doesn't affect the yes category. We will adjust that. We talked about the growth of our industry has come from our compliance modules. If you were to ask anybody, where are you hiring people? It's always in the compliance group. Once they see something to regulate, they jump on that and they regulate it with both feet. We'll work with this and get it presented in the proper manner. The new rules and it hasn't caused us any concerns whatsoever. We'll get the presentations right going forward.
We're struggling with the underemployment rate. Has anyone ever come out with any type of understanding as to, you mentioned regulations, and what these ongoing federal regulations are doing to that underemployment rate? Is that causing it to be lagging? Is that one of the drivers behind that? They would really develop any type of study, understanding of regulations out of Washington and their impact on the underemployment rate?
There have been a lot of studies, and they're all very philosophical in nature, mm-hmm. not so much the real mm-hmm. underlying causality. You get your Democrats who say, I'm here to help you and I'm going to regulate back to prosperity, and the opposite side of the coin says, oh, all of these burdensome rules. I've got 200 more regulations I've got to follow. I don't even know what they say. I got to stop doing everything I'm doing and throw all these bodies and try to. Mm-hmm. So you got both sides of the coin. In terms of the financial industry, they've earned all of the regulation being heaped on them going forward. Do you guys have any other comments?
I think that's true, yeah. That's definitely true.
I think, as David mentioned, philosophically speaking, one of the things we look forward to in 2014 is that the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is out of the way. The tax code has been changed, and there doesn't seem to be as much impetus now to go and affect additional changes to tax code. So there was a lot of legislation in 2012 and early 2013 that was pending that we think was probably keeping employers in a wait-and-see mode that, the coast is sort of clear at this point. So we think that's a positive from a lot of the things that we read, but again, more philosophical than quantitative in terms of, its effect on employment.
I read a study, probably philosophical in nature as well, related to the underemployment and a lot of the issue being around the long-term unemployed, because as employers are looking at the resumes or applications of the longer-term unemployed, they're discounting them mm-hmm. right out of the box. You've been out of a job a year or 2 years, so I'm not even going to, mm-hmm. regardless of their credential or ability, mm-hmm. they're not even looking at them, which just perpetuates the problem. And then in particular, the older workers who are longer term unemployed, because as downsizing happened, typically someone who's with the company longer had a higher salary, so you kind of chopped those off the block, and then you had these younger workers who would work for less, and that's who you're hiring. So instead of taking the seasoned, worker who has experience, they're still taking that younger worker who they can pay less money. So I read that one, I'm sure I'm one of those studies, but.
Doesn't give anybody a great sense of comfort.
No, don't think. But I don't really think we're out of the woods yet.
I think 2014, I don't think the Obama, maybe I was misunderstood, but I don't think the Obama story, medical stuff is over yet. I think you're going to still see a lot of small businesses tapering back on employment. I think that story is not over yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the IRS stories are yet. I mean, they're still wrapping with what they're going to do as far as enforcement. They have to hire people. They have to understand what they're enforcing. I think that story is going to happen in 2014. And I think politically, I think we haven't seen that. I think there's still going to be a big conflict coming up.
Internally.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be highlighted. Right now, we're just kind of in a quiet lull right now. But when we get, you know, let's say, well, probably in about 2 or 3 more months, the campaigns are going to be in full gear for 2014. And it's just going to be on the front page every day, I think. And then it's going to bring that up. And I think small business owners are going to get scared about hiring people.
Yeah, that, as a person that actually works for a small business and actually pays for his own health insurance, I can tell you that we actually, instead of doing our renewal on January 1st, we backed it up to December the 1st so that we wouldn't have to comply with various mandates. But we were told by our HR people, essentially, that our insurance is going up 100, it's going up 40%, maybe even more than that.
40 plus.
When it renews.
Yeah.
On December the 1st because of mandates. Now, they may find a solution to that in between, I don't know, but that's gonna hurt.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, they're talking about that. I wouldn't be surprised if Cap Trust decides not to have health insurance.
Because the market?
Yeah.
Because
yeah. In my case, it's been shifted to me personally, but of course the staff.
100%.
Yeah, but that's a technicality of my status as a partner.
No, I'm a shareholder too.
Yeah, so. Leave that aside. But I mean, it's the for the staff. I mean, you know, and when that starts to hit people,
that's what I'm concerned.
And business owners, I think we're talking about millions and millions.
Well, is it such a bad thing to go to the exchanges rather than as a small business offering? I mean,
I think it's, unfortunately it's kind of an individual thing. I think in some cases it may not be a bad thing. In other cases it will. This depends upon the pricing and the age. You know, for someone like myself, probably it wouldn't be a problem because I'm getting the benefit of that pricing.
Mm-hmm.
But for a 35-year-old, I honestly don't know. I mean, I don't know what the impact. I think, and that's the problem. That's part of the problem. Somebody knows, but not many.
I'm on the board for a hospital, and talking to the doctors and working and stuff, they're very concerned about the quality of care because so much is not being covered. So that the procedures and the testing and sort of the things they're used to doing that was covered, it's a lot of being cut back. So they're concerned about preventive medicine and a lot of the high-tech stuff's not covered. A lot of the high-tech exams and testing and screening. So it's
under the Affordable Care Act, you're saying?
Yeah, and that's what the doctors are really concerned about, is that they're not going to be able to do their job fully for the patients. You know, because things have to be cut back. They just can't afford all that.
But they expect to be busier.
But they expect to be busier, yeah. That's a problem. Not to mention, I can get into soapbox, but not to mention the number of doctors coming up is getting less and less. Mm-hmm. People are not going to the medical fields. They see very little profit in it anymore.
The GPs.
Yeah.
I could still take cardiologist salary, but...
Yeah.
A brain surgeon.
Yeah. Well, I just witnessed my first open heart surgery about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize, I thought it was going to be more like a Seinfeld show where you're upstairs looking over. And they actually brought me to the top of the patient's head where their synchros, you don't see anything, it's covered up. And so I'm sitting right there and we're doing open heart surgery, replacing a valve. And first thing the doctor started talking was about football. And we're talking about football scores and the two of them are sewing like this, like almost like a violin. They had everything going. It was just magnificent. And of course the person's on a heart and lung machine. But to see what they have to go through, you know, and he does surgeries like 3 or 4 a day. Oh my gosh.
Wow. stand up for like 6 hours at a time.
You want to be early.
I want to be early.
That's a strategy. I'm tired of it.
For 9 a.m.
You want to apply the FICO method first in, first out.
Yeah, before lunch.
But anyways, it's a tough business.
Any other questions for David? Okay, with that said.
Motion to accept.
All in favor?
Aye.
Approve the Sawgrass December 31st report. Okay, and we'll move into the CAP Trust. John Griffith will present the CAP Trust report for December 31st.
I guess I'll sit.
Do you need help finding that, John?
Everybody see that? Can I get it? Maybe I can get a link or something. Oh, that's all right. Okay, this is the overall view of the portfolio. We can see the managers, portions of the portfolio represent $173 million. About 71% of the portfolio, 72% of the portfolio, with approximately $50 million being with PFM, $50 million with Staple River, and approximately $72 million with Sawgrass. We also have the cash accounts called Money Market. That's approximately $68 million, 28% of the portfolio. Totals out to about $241 million, which is very comparable to what it was on the last report. This is the fixed income composite. We have a, we have $172,890,000 at the beginning of the quarter. We had net flows of $37,000, investment gains of $310,000, and an ending value of $173 million. So those are all positive figures. You notice that we did change the benchmarks for this report. Went to the non-A or better report, and those are shown in the upper right-hand corner. And the trailing return for the year of the portfolio was 33 basis points. Policy would have been negative 0.14, so the differential is 0.47. If you look at the next lower, the next level, you'd have 0.18 for the quarter. The policy was 0.03 for a difference of 15 basis points. Also, there's the year-to-date column, 2014 year-to-date, and that would be the same number as the quarterly number. Okay. On the next page, this is just a graphic kind of illustrating where the portfolio falls. You'll notice that the, I believe it's the blue, triangle is the portfolio. Can you all see that?
Can I just suggest you might want to take it off that Control L and just show it as a PDF, and then you can actually increase the size of the PDF on the screen. Can you go up to the plus sign up there? Mm-hmm. If you want to make it bigger, then you just scroll down as you talk through it.
Right. Good, sir.
Yeah. Can everybody see that?
Yeah, that's much better.
Yeah, I'll just do this. So in any event, you can see the where the portfolio falls, and typically, again, you're looking for that to reside in the upper left-hand quadrant, and you're getting that effect from the three managers. It's the 1 year, the 3 year, this is the 5 year, and since inception. So the portfolio is falling in the right place. That's positive. So now,
there you go. Yeah.
statistics, which I am hoping to pass on. Okay, this is a graphic, again, illustrating the portfolios in gold, a yellow, the policy is blue. Another demonstration of how the portfolio has performed. Again, you see since inception, the five-year timeframe, the three-year, the one-year, the year-to-date and the quarterly period are all positive. On the next line, the gray dashes are indicative of the portfolio outperforming policy. You can see, again, the numbers, 18 basis points for the quarter and the year-to-date. 1 year with 0.33 against negative 0.14, following the 51st percentile. For the 3 year, it's 2.04 versus 1.73, following at the 21st percentile. For the 5 year, 3.07 versus 2.6 in the 30th percentile. And since inception, it's in the 6th percentile. So that that's positive, that's what we're looking to see. Down below, we have the same records for each of the managers. We notice a little bit of strain from a universe standpoint with respect to PFM Group and Sawgrass, but the overall numbers are still well within the policy, and they are performing effectively. The numbers are quite good for 3, 5, 10 year period, inception period. The next report is for PFM. There's one little item on here.
Hector Young, go up if you would, page 10. Mm-hmm. I just prompted a thought.
Come on. Okay.
Runs away, you come back down just a little bit.
Runs away from me.
Refresh my memory as to how we allocated. If you look at, actually, go down just a little more. One or two more. If you notice, you got 49 million to PFM, 71 to Sawgrass, 51 to Stable River. How do we go about defining the amount of investment portfolio to each investment manager, do you recall?
I think I was the only manager. The committee wanted to diversify and bring in a couple of others, but didn't want to penalize the good performance that Sawgrass has done for them. It was just a strategy move.
Okay.
So they went 40-30-30 to add up to 100.
Just a tactical move.
Just a tactical move.
Okay.
And it's remained there with
using
your ins and outs to kind of rebalance to that.
And basically, our new policy actually defines that. It wasn't defined.
Okay.
Well, obviously, it's going to change.
Thank you.
Okay, now, let's see if I can figure this out. Okay, it's done. This is really kind of redundant, but there was a point on here I did want to make, and that is that the results for as a matter of fact, I don't really know that it's necessary to go through each of the managers again. We've already seen the results, so I don't think we're going to do that. But there is an anomaly kind of for Stable River returns because of, do you remember that accrual that occurred at the beginning of the year? Failure to accrue at the custodian level?
Yes.
Yep. Right. And so if any of you are looking at the report, you might notice that the return number is different for that time frame.
We report as a manager on a trade date basis.
Okay. Right.
So as long as the exposure is either out of the portfolio or in the portfolio, whether the trade has settled or not, will reflect the market value change in the security. Custodian reflects that on a settlement date basis. So that's one difference that we'll often end up with a couple of basis points difference between our performance relative to the custodian. The matter that you're speaking about may simply fail to record at transaction in a timely fashion. They did, but we do reconcile with the custodian each month, and that was an exception that our operations team reconciled, and the custodian said, you know, we show it at a later date, but nonetheless, that's a matter of time.
So I just wanted that to bring that to everyone's attention in case they are reviewing material in the future. But really, that would be the essence of the report.
It also seems to me that I think that when you change the index, I imagine your system only allows for one index and not for the time linking, because in the quarter we have a different return for the two indexes. One for, we have the September and the October return for the 1 to 10 domestic master, A or better, mm-hmm. and then the December return for the 1 to 10 domestic master. I think
we changed ours, but in a different, I think we changed ours October 1st.
Okay, all right.
Because as I recall, the policy is actually adopted on September the 17th.
Yes.
Yeah, so we just took the October 1st as being an effective date. That changed with the change.
Okay.
So that would be a slight adjustment. But that would be, moving forward.
I think those would be pretty minimal.
Right. Yeah. And also, of course, remember that these numbers are net of fees. So that makes a difference as well. Okay, so that's basically it.
Any questions for John?
Motion to accept?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Approve the CAPTRIS December 31st report. And I'm guessing we'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting.
Steve, you said something about wanting to leverage technology every other meeting?
Yeah, we just sort of throw that out. You know, we're kind of doing more and more webinars.
Sure.
We have a camera in our office, and you know, we can sit at our conference room table. And
so just, would you expect the next meeting in, what, January, March, April to begin that? May?
Give us that idea. Only if you guys want to do it.
I have no reservations about it. I just want to make sure everyone's on the same page.
I don't think you have a camera here, do you?
No, are you guys using Google Chat? How are you?
We're using WebEx.
WebEx, okay.
Yeah, so we just email you a link.
Right.
Okay, and we can just sign up.
Yeah, you can sign up. It's pretty simple.
Okay.
So we can cast it up there.
Yeah.
And you can listen in to the others.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other...
You need to put a speaker.
We'll let Stephen work out the bugs for
you. I'll get a guinea pig, yeah.
You'll show up in person.
Yeah.
All right. We'll try.
Sure.
There's so much technology out there.
We can have anything.
Yeah.
Our border is wired with microphones.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So we're doing a lot of meetings that way. It saves on time and travel and stuff. Just like we're trying to get rid of all the paper. All that stuff adds up. Forever for everybody.
Yeah, indeed. And then can the group say after we talk about the issue on the investment category BD, B minus, triple B minus?
Okay.
Sure. Okay. Good. We'll get that clarified for you.
It's easy.
Yeah, it is.
We did not cover our, I'm perfectly happy to share with the whole committee.
Why don't you do that?
Yeah.
Richworth Investments, the holding company. For Stable River and five other investment boutiques, has entered into an agreement with the employees and Lightyear Capital to purchase itself from SunTrust Bank. Our employee equity ownership is at a level of just north of 20%, or will be when this transaction closes. And over the next 4 years, we'll have an opportunity to increase that ownership to 40%. Needless to say, we view this as a big positive. We're increasing our employee ownership, and we have been on a path towards independence from a big bank from 2007. And it's sort of been somewhat of a long journey. we now know, and I certainly wasn't part of the team that was privy to the confidential information, but has been negotiating with Lightyear Capital for 2 years to try to put this together in a way that we thought was best served our clients. If you take a look at a purchase and sale, you know, there's two ways that it can go. One is towards a larger organization where there's a consolidation, and another is with an investing partner. Our goal is to continue to grow our business. To that end, while we will integrate Stable River Capital Management into the other Ridgeworth-owned investment management boutique called Sykes Advisors, we are keeping our staff here in Orlando, which manages our tax exam team, our staff in Atlanta, which manages our taxable team, our client service professionals. We're looking to continue to grow our firm and to do so with a heavy involvement from the employees as well. So this is a relatively new development. We announced this on December the 11th. We were particularly excited. There are multi-year contracts, incentive for some employees and for some employees' equity ownership that had been awarded. So happy to say that my teammates from Stable River, and working with them, will be working under the new banner of Sykes Investment Advisors, a well-established firm. I would say it was headquartered in Upper Saddle River, New Jersey, where the majority of the Sykes investment professionals currently are. However, the CEO of the company would be in Atlanta, in our offices as well. So we'll operate from three offices, from Orlando, from Atlanta, and from Upper Saddle River, New Jersey, once we close our transaction. And we plan to do that sometime in the second quarter. We've gone out and sought consent from our clients, given the fact that this will represent a change of control in our company. And most clients and consultants have responded very positively. Of course, with the caveat, who's going to be managing? Is my team changing? Is the process changing? And you know, obviously, the people and the answer has consistently been no. In fact, your team is more tied to the organization than it's ever been. We look to keep the team together and to continue to grow the business with a partner that's willing to invest in us. We have been on a fairly aggressive campaign now. From an internal standpoint, we've added a senior investment professional on our tax-exempt side to head our credit research team there. We have added staff in our Atlanta office for sales support. So I think that the proof is in the pudding, whether the investor is willing to help us help our business grow. And so far, they've told us to go ahead and move forward with our plans to add personnel to our firm, and that's a good indication to us.
For sure. What's the source of Lightyear's funding?
They are a private equity firm, so they maintain private equity funds. We are in their, I believe it's their fifth fund, which had a vintage year of 2012. So what they do is they raise capital. The Lightyear Capital is purely in the financial services business. Don Marin, the founder of Lightyear Capital, who is a veteran, he was the CEO of Payne Weber for 20 years exactly. Works with a team that has a lot of experience in banking, brokerage, and asset management.
But it's part of the portfolio that you'll be part of. Will you be the only money manager in that portfolio, or will they have others?
They still have available capital in that portfolio. I believe, and I may need to clarify this, but I believe that there is another money manager in that portfolio. It is a REIT. It's called Clarion Partners. And Clarion Partners was formerly ING's real estate investment trust business. So they bought that business from ING that divested of the business.
What other types of businesses are they acquiring?
They have some banking organizations. They have some technological services to the financial industry. I'm aware of one large brokerage that they acquired in 2010 and have since sold. Our goal is not only to increase our ownership of the company, which is in line with Lightyear's, but also, at the end to emerge as an independent investment management firm. I would not be surprised at all to see investments in perhaps some other boutiques, like the boutiques that we own, over time. Our firm is somewhat unique to Lightyear. They don't have, they have asset managers, they don't have ones that have mutual fund families and distribution capabilities that we have, and we continue to grow. So that was a clear interest of Lightyear Capital.
Well, my question would then be, and again, I don't take this as an antagonism, because that's not my objective at all. I'm not trying to plant holes in the deal. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to understand it. As you move forward and you, as an employee, and some of the other fellows that I've learned over the years, your objective is to kind of get control of the company. Will you be generating enough potential capital to get that done? I mean, or will you have to find another investor to get?
It's certainly cash flow positive. That's
right.
Obviously a big hurdle for Lightyear. I would imagine, and again, I think I'm probably speculating here. We could certainly have Ashu Parikh join us for a conference call if that would be desirable, but that we will, as we emerge, a private equity firm generally looks for a 5 to 7, maybe 10-year investment in a financial services company. They're looking to sell their interest. In terms of what their target threshold is, we feel like there was a very attractive evaluation. The firm sold for $245 million plus based on certain targets of client retention, $265 million. The seller is very interested in the client retention as well, SunTrust Bank, so they're working with us to that end. We foresee a strong partnership with them, but as we look at our makeup of clients, they are no longer the largest intermediary or component of our client base. this point in time. That's something that's changed over the past couple of years. So there will be an opportunity, you know, one of the avenues, for instance, would be that the employees could buy the firm by taking out debt to do so at some point in time. That would certainly have to be negotiated with Lightyear. But as we look at the companies that they've invested in, those companies' experience, this was part of the two-year dance, if you will, to make sure that we were working with the right partner. And very fortunate for us is that SunTrust Bank was very supportive of that through the due diligence period. They viewed our success and our maintenance of our business as critical to their success because we have a number of shared clients. So they allowed us to seek out a partner that we felt made a good long-term partner for us.
Just one last quick question. Approximately how many employees do you have in Sykes versus State? And well, the two of them together.
We'll represent about $36 billion of the $50 billion in assets for Bridgeworth. Sykes has, I believe it's about 78 investment professionals. State River has about 15. So they're a little bit larger than we are, obviously. And that will allow us to benefit from bolstered research, credit research, but also from the perspective of the client in being able to offer from tax exempt to taxable, from short term to long duration, high yield bank loan, and non-dollar. So just about the full spectrum of fixed income investment.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions for Mark? Thank you, Mark, for giving us that summary.
Super.
I do have your consent form here signed.
Okay. And I think I mentioned to you, I have a signed version, but it's not signed by your attorney. So the goal is to have Mr. Parikh sign this form.
That's the consent form.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is what is signed by the attorney, and I'll send it over to you once the approval is done.
Okay.
Because I need to sign today, so
okay.
I'll send it over to you once the approval is done.
Very good.
Okay. We'll adjourn this meeting. I believe Ashin has to sign this contract.
Yes, and as I said, we have a signed version, but I think we're not in sync.
We need the other signatures on it as well, so I'll just send that to you once it's completed. So we'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.